Okay, we're beginning here, 14 lines down, on the top of Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph. Tan Rabbanan, Zegiteich Me'ayom, Imeiti Micholizeh. This is your get from today, if I die from this illness. V'nafala bayit alav, and then a house collapses on him. Ohichisho nachash, or he is bitten by a snake. Eino get. That is not a get, seemingly because the t'nai, or the condition that he placed in the get, was that he dies from this illness. And his death was caused by some exogenous variable where the house collapsed or he was bitten by a snake. And therefore, the condition was never fulfilled and the get is not a good get. Im lo emod micholizeh, if I do not survive, get well from this sickness, benafal alav habayit, and then the house collapses on him, oy kisho nachash, or he's bitten by a snake, hari ze get. That is a good get. Maishna resha. Maishna Seifa. What is the difference between the first case in the Braita and the second case in the Braita? In both instances, he makes a condition that is connected to this sickness and then dies from some exogenous variable. So why in the first case of the Mishnah is it considered not to be a get? And in the second case of the Mishnah, it's not considered to be a get. The truth is, as the Tosafot points out, that the Yerushalmi does make a distinction between the Reisha and the Seifa, and that is that in the Reisha, he specifically is Matneh, conditions to get on dying from that particular ailment. And in this case, he doesn't die from that ailment. On the other hand, the formulation in the second half of the Braita is, if I do not survive this illness, if I do not get better from this illness. So even though his death was caused by some exogenous variable, nevertheless, he still doesn't survive the illness. And therefore, there is a kiyum of the tnai, there is a fulfillment of the condition, and that's why it is a good get. And that's how the Rishalmi deals with the seeming contradiction within the Braita. On the other hand, the Bavli does not accept that and says that the Braita seems to be internally contradictory. And that is likely because the Bavli focuses more on the intent of the individual rather than the particular dikduk of the wording of the individual. So now the Gemara makes a cryptic statement, which is Shachum hitam, achalo ari, ein lanu. They sent from over there, means from Eretz Yisrael. If he was eaten by a lion, ein lanu, we don't have it. The way that Rashi explains this line in the Gemara is that they had a case similar to the Braita in Eretz Yisrael, which is an individual says, im lo emod micholizeh, I do not survive the sickness, that this should be a get. And then he was eaten by a lion. And the people in Eretz Yisrael sent, ein lanu. The aloha that we conclude is ein lanu. It is not a get because it's unsa d'lo shchiach. It is an item that a person would not anticipate. It is something so far-fetched that no one would have considered it inside of their conditions that they make. And since that's the case, it's not a get because it was not incorporated by the t'nai or the condition that he placed for the get to come true. So in that way, the people in Eretz Yisrael are corroborating basically what the Bavli believes, according to this statement, which is that when you have unsud lo shchiachach, when you have an event, an exogenous variable that is so far-fetched that we don't consider that to be a fulfillment of the condition because there's no way he had in mind this outcome when he made the condition or he placed that condition on the get. That's the way Rashi explains it. Others explain it that ein lanu means all we have is this braita. And since we have this braita, it means depending on what he said. If he said micholizeh, then it would not be a good. If he said emod micholizeh, then it would be a good get. And that's all we have. Ein lanu is the outcome of the braita. And that would be similar to the way the Tosafot brought from the Yushalmi, that the Yushalmi believes that this difference between the ratio and the safe of the braita is actually proper. On the other hand, the Rambam sees this as being ein lanu. We don't know what the answer is, and therefore it's a safek. And because it's a safek, then we don't know if she's divorced in this instance or not, and that's how the Rambam paskets migureshet venu migureshet. How gavra, the zavin aro lechavre, an individual sold land to his friend, kabalele ko unso dimityalet. He accepted upon himself recourse for anything that happens to the field, that he'll replace it for this individual. Sof afiku bah nahara. In the end, the government exerted eminent domain, confiscated the property, and put a river or a canal right through that piece of land. Ata the kamei de Ravina. So they came before Ravina to adjudicate the case and see if he had to repay this individual for the land that was lost. Malay, zil shafile, go make good to him. Because you accepted upon yourself achrayut, responsibility for any occurrence. And since you accepted any occurrence, this is any occurrence. And you have to replace the land. Because it's called unsud mityalit. Any event that could possibly happen, you accepted upon yourself to replace the land. Amalei Ravacha bar tachlifa the Ravina. Unsud lo shchiyachu. Wait a minute. This is different than your normal case of ones, where something that is out of his control, because delosh keach, it's a very uncommon, far-fetched case. And therefore, like what we saw before with the gitin, it should be outside the realm of the guarantee or warranty that he gave this individual, because it's something that no one would have anticipated. El galgal milta, umata lekame derava. So the din went back and forth and finally ended up in front of Rava. Amalhu, unsud delosh keachu. That it is ones that is far-fetched, something that is totally unanticipated, and therefore not covered by the warranty or guarantee that he gave this individual, because he clearly did not consider or intend for his guarantee or warranty to cover such events, because nobody would have thought the possibility of this coming true, and therefore it's not included under the warranty, and he does not have to replace the land for this individual. Heitave Ravina the Rava. Ravina asks Rava, "Im lo emod micholize, benafal alav bayit oikishon hakash harizeget." So he asks from the brayta that we brought before, which seems to indicate that even when it is ones delo shchiach, that we say that that is considered by the Tanai, and the Tanai says, "If I don't get up from this ailment, and then he dies again from some other exogenous variable, something far fetched like the house collapsing on him or being bitten by a snake, harizeget, it is a good get." Amalei Rava, Vema Meresha, Enu get. What are you bringing me from the latter half of that Braita? Why don't you bring me from the first half of that Braita, where it says that it's not a good get? Amalei Ravacha, Midifti, the Ravina, Mishum de Kasha, Resha, Seifa, Lomotvinan, Tiufta, Mine. Ravacha, Midifti says the Ravina, who now was pushed back by Rava, when Rava says, look, the Braita supports me in the first half, maybe it's a question of me on the second half. So Rav Acha Medifti says, just because the Reisha and Seifa are contradictory, does that mean we can't ask a question on Rava from that Braita? Amalei in. Ravina responds to me in the affirmative, Kaven Dekasha Reisha Seifa. Since there is a contradiction between the two halves of the Braita, Lo Itmar Be Midrasha. It wasn't brought in the Be Midrash. It was not vetted in the presence of the Chachamim. Mushabeshtahi. And therefore it's a problematic Braita, which we have to question the Misora behind it because it has an external contradiction. And therefore, you have to go Zito Batar Svara. You have to go after one's logical argument in this case. And the logic dictates that when you have these far-fetched, outlandish, outrageous cases of unanticipated events, that they're not included when a person speaks or makes conditions. And you see from here a very important principle with regards to halakha, that svara is paramount. Things have to make sense. The halacha has to make sense. It can't be nonsensical, but we have to follow a svara. We're coming to conclusions about the halacha, and therefore if we find a braita that is internally inconsistent, then it can't follow the svara. And since it can't follow any svara, it can't be a braita that has validation or weight within the misora. Now, there are a number of things to note over here. One of which is, the Tosafot says, how could it be that Ravina challenged Rava from get, or the issue of get, to monetary matters? And that is because in the beginning of the Gemara in Ketubot, Rava makes an unequivocal statement that Einon Tzin B'Gitin, that we do not consider ones by Gitin, that by Gitin we ignore any claim of ones, no matter how far-fetched it is. We say Einon Tzin B'Gitin, and the get goes through, no matter what happened, in order to be mekayim, the condition that was placed in the get. The Gemara there in the beginning of Ketubot discusses why or the reasons for that gezerah. But then, if that's the case, how could Ravina challenge Rava from a case of gitin? Since Rava's shita by gitin might have nothing to do with this shita with regards to mimononot. And therefore, the Re makes a distinction here, a classic distinction that Tosafot would make, which is that there are three types of onsin. There are three different types of unexpected, unanticipated events that can happen. There's something that is shchiach, a common event that would take place. And in those cases, everybody agrees, ain onus. Then in that case, you can't make a claim of onus saying that it happened and I couldn't have anticipated it, or it's something that I couldn't have foreseen, because it's something that you should have anticipated, even though it's not always a common event. But nevertheless, it's something that's within the purview of the normal course of a person's interactions. And therefore, it is covered by any warranty or any tnai that you make. On the other hand, there is an onus delo shchiach klal, something that's completely unanticipated, so far-fetched, that nobody would consider this within their purview or their condition or their statement, because it's something that you would never have even dreamt of happening. And so because of that, it is outside the realm of any warranty or any condition, and that everybody agrees to as well. And actually, that is what our Gemara is speaking about here. Our Gemara is speaking about that incident or that type of onus where it is so far-fetched or so unanticipated that everybody would agree in that case that an onus like that would be a fair claim that I'm exempt from the warranty, or that my reason for not being mekayim the tnai is valid because it's so far-fetched and so unanticipated. And then there's a middle type of onus, which is, as Tosafot calls it, b'shchiach v'lo shchiach. In a case where it is an unanticipated event that is somewhat far-fetched, but not totally out of the realm. So it sits somewhere between common unanticipated items and totally uncommon and unanticipated items. So there's a middle ground that sits between these two extremes. And that middle ground, that's what the Gemara in the beginning of Ketubot is speaking about. And that's where Rava says, ain onus b'gitin. Over there, it doesn't matter what happened. There, it's considered to be a get, and we don't allow you to make any claim there. Again, the Gemara there explains, mishom prutzot u mishom tsnuot, that there's a reason for that, and there's a gzera over there. And that's why our Gemara here and the Gemara there are not in contradiction, because they're talking about different levels of unanticipated events, and therefore the outcomes are different. Here, it's so far-fetched that even Rava agrees that it's a fair excuse, or that you don't cover it with your warranty. Over there by Gitin, it is somewhat far-fetched, and therefore Rava says you have no claims, because all of that is covered by this gzeira by Gitin. And again, everybody agrees by the case where it's something that you should have anticipated, or possibly could have anticipated, that onus is either covered by the warranty, or it's not considered to be a reason to fail in a condition. But put Papa of Rav Huna Breid Rav Yeshua, Zavan Shum Shemei Agida Denar Malka. So Rav Papa Rav Huna Breid Rav Yeshua purchased sesame on the banks of the river Malka. Nar Malka seems to be a canal that ran between the Tigris and Euphrates rivers. It happened to be a very large canal that was a government-sponsored canal. And they purchased these items, and then they want to ship them back to their home or to wherever they want to sell them. Agur Malachay, they hired shippers, sailors, Lavrinu, in order to move them to where they wanted. Kabilu Alayu Kol Unsa Dmidyalit, they accepted upon themselves any unanticipated event, anything that would happen. The way Rashi explains it is the seller was Mikabel de Sachrayut, that it seems like the seller not only sold it to them, but also guaranteed them the shipping of the item to their destination. Therefore, Rashi says, when we're speaking here, we're speaking about the seller's warranty. Whereas, according to the Tosafot Rid, he says that the shippers gave the warranty, that they warranted that they would get it to the destination. So, Yistakar Nar Malka. In the end, the canal of Nar Malka was dammed, and there was no water, and there was no way to ship it because there was no water in the canal. Amar Elohu, Aguru Chamre. They said to the shippers, according to the Tosafot Rid, or to the sellers, according to Rashi, go hire out donkey drivers or moving trucks and avkinu nihalan and bring it to us or get it to the destination. Because you guys accepted upon yourselves to protect us against any event that took place, even unanticipated problems. And so even though this might be an unanticipated problem, you accept the responsibility for that, then you need to ship it to the destination. After the Kamei de Rova, so they went and told Rova about the situation. Amalu, kake, chivare, as Rashi explains over here, you white geese. And that usually is a reference to Talmidei Chachamim, but Talmidei Chachamim who are of advanced age, and therefore they have white hair, and therefore he calls them white geese. Shalchei Glimei Dinshe, you're stripping people of their cloaks, meaning that you are paskening halacha to your benefit when it's incorrect. Over here, you're forcing these individuals to keep to their warranty, even though they were not obligated to do so. Because, unso de lo shkiyachu, similar to what Rava said before, that when you have these completely unanticipated, far-fetched events, those are not incorporated under the warranty, or they're not considered as part of the conditions or the tenai that's there. And over here, they warrantied them for any event, but this was so anticipated and so far-fetched that it definitely does not fall under the warranty, and therefore they did not have to hire donkeys to carry them up, because who could have ever thought that they would dam a major canal between the Tigris and Euphrates rivers? So now the Mishnah says, Lo titiyad cheid imo ele bifnei edim. During that time period, after he's already given the get to the woman, but he has yet to pass away from that illness or that sickness, he should not be alone with his wife. Afilu al pi eved, afilu al pi shivcha. He can be together with her as long as there's someone else there, even an eved, even a shivcha. Chutz mi shivchata, with the exception of her maidservant, mibnei shliba gas ba b'shivchata. Because with regard to that, she doesn't feel any reticence or deterrence from doing what she pleases or how she wants in front of her own shivchata. And therefore, that's not considered to be enough of a shimur or protection against them having bia. Mahi boltan ayamim. During that period of time, what is the status of the woman? Rabbi Yehuda omer ke'eshetish, that she is a full-fledged married woman. L'chol devarea, for all aspects, which we'll see in the Gemara. Rabbi Yossi omer migureshet ve'enu migureshet. She has the status of safek. Later on in the Gemara, we'll see that there's a braita that brings additional opinions as to what exactly the status of this woman is in the interim. Rashi comments over here, the reason that we don't allow them to be alone together is shema yavo aleha, because we're afraid that they will have bi'ah. Because there's a possibility that they would then reconsummate the marriage, and then she would require a second bill of divorce. And even according to the one who says that we don't worry about them consummating the marriage again, she is a single woman now, and there's a restriction of yichud with a pnuya. So Rashi over here says that the issue at hand is the question of possibly being married or the problem of having yichud with a pnuya, and that's why we don't want them to be alone together. Now, Rashi does not say that the problem here is something that we had seen earlier in the Masechta, which is get yashan, the possibility that they have biyah before the get is given, because the instance where it's considered to be a get yashan is a situation in which they wrote the get, but he has yet to give the get, and they have biyah in the interim, and therefore he's mevatel the get. But that's not the situation here, because the situation here is he's already given the get to the woman. We're just waiting for the effectiveness of the get. And therefore, the issue is not an issue of get yashan, but rather the issues that Rashi raised. On the other hand, the Ramban over here says that Rashi in Masechet Ketubot says the problem is get yashan, because there is a possibility that this individual will not pass away from this ailment. If that's the case, the get is not an effective get. So it's the equivalent of a get that is written, but yet to be given. And therefore, if they have bia in that interim period, it would be deemed to be a get yashan. So there is a way to explain that the problem here is a problem of a get yashan, but Rashi and most of the Rishonim over here point to the other issues of either the consummation of a new marriage or the problem of yichud with a pnuyan. That's why he's not allowed to be alone with his wife. Now we'll discuss later on in the Gemara what the connection between the first half of the Mishnah and the second half of the Mishnah is. Mahi ba'otana yamim. Rashi believes, and we'll see later on in the Gemara, that that is an independent statement, and it's not referencing back to the previous part of the Mishnah, whereas the Rabbeinu Tam, the Rabbeinu Chananel all believe that that's modifying the first part of the Mishnah, and that will have nafkuminot, as we'll see later on in the Gemara. Tanu Rabbanan, Ra'uha shenit yatcha imo be'afela. They saw that he was secluded with her at night. Oh, sheyashna imo tachet margalot amita. Or, he slept with him at the base of the bed. Ein choshishim shema nitasku b'davar acher. We don't have suspicions that they engaged in marital relations. But we do worry about the fact that there possibly was znut over here. But we don't worry about marriage. We also worry about the possibility of marriage. The Gemara asks, Maika Amar, what is meant by this braita that seemingly is hard to understand? So Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Avuachik Amar, this is the explanation of the braita. If they saw that they had marital relations, we do worry about the fact that they did now consummate the marriage, and therefore you would need a second get, and the first get is no longer valid. Natan laksafim. If we see him giving her money, whether it's before or after the marital relations, koshishim mishum znut, we assume that that was not for consummation of the marriage, rather a paid engagement. Damrinan betnana natana, that he paid her to spend time with her. That he paid her for her conjugal services. And therefore we don't worry about the fact that they possibly consummated a marriage in that case, because one would preclude the other. Even in the case where we see them quote unquote transacting and exchanging money, who says that he's paying her? Maybe he's giving her a gift, and therefore we still worry about the possibility of kiddushin. Then according to whom does this statement of Rabbi Bar Chana and Rabbi Yochanan go like? This is the machlok between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. If they are mityached after they were divorced and then they were mityached, what is the status of the woman in that case? Machloket Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. Beit Hillel requires a second get from her at that point in time, whereas Beit Shammai says not. Qualifying that machloket of Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, Rabbi Bar Chana and Rabbi Yochanan says machloket kishra'ua shenivala. Machloket between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai is only when they saw them engaging in marital relations. Avalo ra'u ashenivala. But if they didn't see them engaging in marital relations, divrei hakol ein tzricha imenu get sheni. Then for sure, they don't need a second get. Kiman, who is that like here in this machloket between the Tana Kama and Rabbi Yosi? Kedivrei hakol. That follows everybody's opinion, because both the Tana Kama and Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda, in this machloket in the Braita, both agree that if you saw them having marital relations, then we do require another get. And therefore, both of them could agree with that position of Beit Hillel, that when you see marital relations, you require a get. And that's true both of the Tana Kama, as well as Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda. Matkiv lo Abayi. Abayi challenges Rav Nachman's explanation of the Braita and says, Midik Sofim Ktani? Where do you see money mentioned in the Braita? That's a pretty big thing to leave out of the Braita. And we know that sometimes the Braita doesn't have all the information in it, but that seems to be the pivotal issue here, is whether he paid money or he didn't pay money. And that's totally absent from the Braita. So that's unlikely to be the explanation of the Braita. El Amar Abayi, Hachikamor, Ra'u Hashiniva Allah, if they saw that they had marital relations, Choshishim Mishum Znut, Ven Choshishim Mishum Kiddushin. We assume that that engagement was simply for fun, and not because of Kiddushin, not to get married. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Av Choshishim Mishum Kiddushin. We also worry about the fact that they possibly then did consummate a marriage again. Now, what's interesting here, and Rashi notes this, is what does it mean, choshishim mishum znut? We worry about znut. The truth is that worrying about znut indicates that there's some sort of halachic implication to the znut. And what Rashi points out over here is that there's absolutely no halachic implication to this activity right now. For one, if it's to be posel her from a kohen, she's already psula from the kuhuna because she is a grusha, she's a divorcee. So she's already psula the kuna, and therefore giving her a title of znut or biat znut wouldn't change anything in this case. As far as her being a bat kohen or an eshet kohen, and therefore precluding her from eating truma, over there the status of zona or znut is only applicable when she has biat with someone who is asurala, someone who is restricted to her. Over here, this individual is not restricted to her like a kuti or a eved knani or a mamzer, but simply a panui and a pnuya, they don't have any din of znut, except according to Rabbi Elazar. So what Rashi notes over here is that the lashon of choshishin is just a borrowed lashon from the lashon of kiddushin. Because when we say choshishin the kiddushin, that has halachic implications. So when they say choshishin the znut, it's not really that we worry there's any halachic implication. It simply means the opposite of kiddushin, which is znut. Tosfot over here says that, according to Rabbi Elazar, who we mentioned before, there is a possibility that she would become a zona with a panoy and a pnuya who have bi'ah, and that would have, as a bat kohen, plukud her from eating truma. So there is a possibility that choshishin leznut has a lachic implication, even though, as Tosfot notes himself, that we find nowhere in Shas that the Gemara or the Mishnayot support that position of Rabbi Elazar, so it would be hard to say that the Gemara or the Braita here is following that opinion. So now, according to Abaye, the machloki between the Tana Kama and Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda is, when we see them having marital relations, what do we assume? According to the Tana Kama, we assume that that was all znot. And according to Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, worry about the possibility that that was marital relations to consummate the marriage, and she would need a second get. Kaman hazlaha dama Rabba Bar Chanan Rabbi Yochanan. Then that qualification of Rabba Bar Chanan Rabbi Yochanan in the machloket between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, when he says machloket kishra'ua shenivala, the machloket between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai is only when they saw them having marital relations. Avaloroa shenivala, if they don't see them, diviyakol ain't tzrichai menu get sheni. Everybody agrees you don't need a second get. Come on, that must be following the position of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, because Beit Hillel is the one who says that when there's yichud, we require a second get. And the way Rabbi Bar Chanan Rabbi Yochanan is saying yichud means that we saw them having biyah. And that would be akin to the position here of Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. It says that when we see them having marital relations, we worry about kiddushin. Matkiflo Rova. So Rova now challenges Abaye's explanation. Imkain my af. What are you going to do with the word af in the Braita? The way that Rashi says it over here, af choshishim bishum kiddushin, means that it seems that we're adding on an isur to the isur that exists already. Well, the way that Abaye is explaining it, the Tana Kama doesn't have any Isur, doesn't have any Chumrah. He says that we're not Choshesh. And then Rabbi Yossi will come along and says, we are Choshesh. Well, if he's just saying we are Choshesh, that's not Af. He's not also adding on a Chumrah. He's not putting something on top of what already exists in the position of the Tana Kama. The way that Tosafot explains it is that they are mutually exclusive positions. To say Choshishin l'kedushin and Choshishin l'znut are mutually exclusive positions. So how could Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda say Af Choshishin mishum kedushin? We also worry about Kiddushin. Well, if you're worrying about Kiddushin, then you're not worrying about Znut. If you're worrying about Znut, you're not worrying about Kiddushin. So how can you say Af also and put them together when they are mutually exclusive positions? So this is the way that Rova explains the Braita. Hachikamar. Now, we only have in our Gemara the statement of Rabbi Yossi by Rabbi Yehuda, but if you see here on the Misorat HaShas, he has, whether that's in the gears of some of the Gemarot or implied by the Gemara later on, that this was the belief that the Tana Kama says, Ruah Shindivala. If they saw them having marital relations, choshishim mishum znut, vein choshishim mishum kiddushin. We worry about znut, and we don't worry about kiddushin. Rabbi Yossi, bi Rabbi Yehuda, omer, af lo rahu shenivala. Even if they didn't see them having marital relations, choshishim mishum kiddushin, then we worry about the possibility that there was a consummation of the marriage. So now you have a very bifurcated din here between the Tana Kama and Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. According to the Tana Kama, even if we saw them having marital relations, we don't worry about Kiddushin whatsoever. And of course, if we didn't see them having marital relations, simply having Yichud, we wouldn't worry about it. According to Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, even if we don't see them having relations, we just say they're having Yichud, we worry about it. And as Rashi notes over here, Kevin Shira'u, Ashenit Yachta, Edeya Yichud, Hein Hein Edei Bia, the Edim for Yichud or the Edim for Bia, the Kevin the Geisei, Ahadodi, since they are so familiar with each other and there will be no reticence between them, Choshishin Lebiya, we assume that they had marital relations and therefore we worry about Kiddushin. So Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda says we worry about Kiddushin whether we saw them having Biya or not. The Tana Kama says we don't worry about Kiddushin whether we saw them or not. Now the Gemara says, Ukaman Azla Hadama Rabba Bar Chanan Rabbi Yochanan. Then that qualification of Rabba Bar Chanan Rabbi Yochanan in the machloka between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, Machloke Kishra'u Shenivala, the machloke between Beit Hillel and Shammai is when we saw them having marital relations. Avaloro'u Shenivala, if we didn't see them having marital relations, Divir HaKol, and it's Yichai Menu Get, then we agree, everybody agrees you don't need a get. Kiman, who's that like? Dolo Kechat. That doesn't fit into either of the positions here, because according to the Tana Kama, even if we saw them having Biah, we don't worry about Kiddushin, as opposed to Beit Hillel, who according to Rabba Bar Chanan, Rabbi Yochanan thinks that we do worry about it when you see them having biyah. We do worry about kiddushin. And according to Rabbi Yossi, but Rabbi Yehuda, we also can't fit into that statement of Rabbi Chanan, Rabbi Yochanan, because over there he says if they didn't see them having marital relations, even Beit Hillel agrees you don't need a get. But over here, according to Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, And if we don't see them, we assume that they did have kiddushin and consummated a marriage, and therefore neither of these positions will work or be in accordance with that qualification of Rabbi Bar Chanan and Rabbi Yochanan in the machlok between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. So now, mahi botana yamim. What is her status during that period of time? Rabbi Yehuda Omer, keishet ish tochol dvara. Rabbi Yossi Omer, migureshet veinu migureshet. Tana, ubilvad shiamut. The assumption is that he passes away. So now, if he's going to pass away, chimait havigito? Wait a minute. If the condition here is that he passes away, the way Rashi explains it over here is, aval ilo mate, if he didn't pass away, igle milto the lav gito v'chayav chatat. Then we see retroactively that it wasn't a get, and he's chayav chatat. And he says here, the Gemara is asking whether according to Rabbi Yehuda, or whether according to Rabbi Yossi, how do we explain their positions now? What we're suggesting now is that Rabbi Yehuda believes that the get's not effective until he dies, and we see Mayom imeti as saying that it's a reversal of his position, that's why she's an eshet ish, until he dies, and when he dies, then the get goes effective. According to Rabbi Yossi, it's a safek, whether it's a retraction, or whether it's simply a condition, but either way, it doesn't go effective until at least after death. And that's the Gemara's problem with this, which is, after he dies, it becomes a get, according to this statement. Don't we already know that you can't have a get after mita? Or the way that the Tosafot Reed explains it over here is, the Gemara says, it's obvious that the chimait havigito, it's obvious that after he dies, it can't be a get. If that's the case, it must be that the get was effective prior to his death. And if that's the case, how can Rabbi Yehuda state over here that she's an ishinit the chol davar until the point of his death? Because it's clear that the get had to be effective before the point of his death. And same with Biyosi. Biyosi agrees, at least partially, or is misupak, that the get might be effective before that time. If that's the case, then if the get is effective, why is she a safek keshedish? She should be completely a penuya. And so that's the nature of the question. According to Rashi, it seems that the Gemara wants it to become effective after the death of the individual, which the Gemara says is impossible. According to the Reed, the Gemara knows it's impossible that it can't happen after death. And therefore it's saying, implied in that is that it was effective beforehand. If that's the case, then how do you explain the position of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi? V'akai melon, dein get lachar mita. Don't we already know that you can't have a get after mita? Amarabba bomer me'et shani be'ulam. He says that the get goes effective from the time that it was in the world. And this is what I discussed before, Machloket Rashi and the Rabbeinu Tam, as to how to explain this vis-a-vis the Mishnah. Rashi claims that our Mishnah has two cases in it. There's a case which says that, and there everybody agrees that the get is effective immediately. Because over there he stipulates mehayom. And since he stipulates mehayom, it goes effective immediately. The question in the Mishnah, which is the latter half of the Mishnah, is a totally new case. And that case is, Bomer be'et shani ba'olam. He says, Hare ze giteich, me'et shani ba'olam. That this is your get in the last moment or the moment that I'm still in the world. Which means a moment before I die, this get goes effective. And Rashi says that's the second part of the Mishnah is a totally independent case. And that's what the Mishnah says or means when it says, Mahim bontana yamim. What's her status during that period of time? During what period of time? The time after he uses this type of language, Me'et shani ba'olam. What pushes Rashi to say that is that the fact that it says bi'omer, that when he says, which means that that's the way that he articulated or stated the get. And that's why Rashi believes that's a different case than the case of Harizekitech, Me'ayom, Imeti, Micholizeh. And therefore, the way Rashi explains it is that the machloket here between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi is about Breira. That Rabbi Yehuda says to us that there is Breira. And therefore, the moment before he dies, we finally find out when exactly that moment is when the get is effective. But once that has been decided, every other moment prior to that made her a full-fledged Eshadish. Because now we know the period of time when the get went effective. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi believes in Breira. And therefore, even once we find out when that moment was before death, at every moment along the continuum, that could have possibly been the moment before death. And therefore, every moment is a safek, whether she is an Eshadish or not an Eshadish. And even when we find out in the end when that exact moment before death was, that doesn't clarify anything for us because Ein Breira. We don't hold the Breira, and therefore we don't say retroactively it clarifies every moment, but rather every moment remains a moment of Safek. As Rabbeinu Tam and Rabbeinu Chananel, many others believe that the second half of the Mishnah is a continuation of the first half of the Mishnah, because the Mishnah gives no preface to say Mahi Behotana Yamim, that all of a sudden the Rabbah wants to add in words there that don't exist. But rather, they have a girsa, according to Rabbeinu Chananel, it says Ke Omer Meichani Baolam. It's as if he said from the last moment I was in the world, that when he makes the declaration that Harei Zekitech Meyom Im Meiti Micholizeh, it's Ke Omer. It's as if he is saying, not literally from today, but rather Meichani Baolam, at the last moment I'm in this world, that's when that get will go effective. Which is that his intent is to postpone the get to the latest moment possible, because he doesn't really want to divorce this woman. He's only divorcing her to protect her from Yibum, or from any eventuality that she become an Aguna. And therefore, he doesn't want the get to be immediately effective, but rather effective at the last moment possible when it still could be effective. And that's what it means, Knasek Hit Omer. It's as if he says this. And therefore, according to them, when you say, Harizeh Gitech Me'ayom Me'imeti Micholizeh, that's implied in that statement. Even though he doesn't explicitly say it, it is implied in that statement. And therefore, the machloket here between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda is about exactly this point. When we say Mehayom, how literally do we take Mehayom? Rabbi Yehuda says, it means Ki Omer Me'echani Ba'olam. It means from the last moment I'm in the world. And therefore, the Yom is not taken literally. And he remains fully married to this woman until that last moment. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi is not sure whether we take Mehayom very literally, means immediately that they're divorced, or do we say it's Ki Omer, as if he is postponing it until that last moment, and therefore she's a Safek Eshedish, nothing to do with Breira, which is one of the criticisms of Rashi's interpretation that Rabbi Yossi does not hold a Breira, because the Ri says that if Rabbi Yossi doesn't hold a Breira, even when we find out what exactly is that moment before death, then it still would be a Safek. And we would never know if the get was effective. It doesn't go effective at any point then. And how can you say that during that time she's a safek migureshet v'eino migureshet, but after the point of death, she's definitely divorced? If you don't hold a breira, that means that there was no moment in time where the get actually went effective, because every moment, we're not sure if that's really the last moment. And therefore, they reject Rashi's view of the machloket being revolving around breira, but rather, in this explanation, see that machloket revolving around the meaning of, the literal meaning of me'ayom versus ke'omer me'echani ba'olam. Rabbi Yehuda says that it's effectively saying at the last moment of life. And Rabbi Yossi is uncertain as to whether Hayom means literally today, or we say Ke'omer as if he says the last moment I'm in the world. So Tan Rabbanan, Yamim Shebentayim, these interim days after he's given the get, but before he dies, what is her status? Bala Zakai B'mitziata. Her husband has all rights of a husband and a wife. That means that if she finds something, it belongs to the husband. Umalaseyadeh, an output belongs to her husband. He has a right to nullify her vows, viorsha, and he inherits her like a husband would. Umitamela, if he's a kohen, he's allowed to become tamei for taking care of the burial of his wife. Klalo shel davar, the general principle that you can rely on is harehi ishto l'chol davar, that she is a full-fledged wife. Ela sheina tzricha imenu get sheni, he just doesn't need a second get, meaning that this get will eventually go effective when he does pass away. So he needs no other get, Divi Rabbi Yehuda, which is akin to Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah, which is that she is an Eshet Ish, Lichol Devareha. Rabbi Meir Omer, Bilata Tluya. Which as Rashi says over here, Hadavar Taloi Ad Shiyamot. Oh, Ad Shiyamot Micholizeh. That the matter is abeyance until we get the final information. Whether he dies from this. And if he dies from it, then it's clarified that it was a get. And if he survives or he doesn't succumb to this illness, then it would not be a get. So then Rabbi Meir believes that effectively the get is effective immediately. We just need the condition to be fulfilled to know whether it really was or was not effective. But Rabbi Meir believes that retroactively it was effective from the moment the get was given. It's just a question of whether the condition will be fulfilled or not be fulfilled. And that's the position of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Bilata Safek. That the Bilah is a Safek. And the Gemara will discuss in a minute what's the difference between Rabbi Meir's position and Rabbi Yossi's position is. But it seems from Rabbi Yossi that it remains a safek throughout that period of time. It's never clarified retroactively, but rather every moment is a safek of being the last moment. And therefore she always remains a safek eshet ish until the moment where we get clarification that the get is effective or is not effective. As opposed to Rabbi Meir, where retroactively we get clarity, according to Rabbi Yossi, we never get any clarity. And the Chachamim say that she is and is not Migreshet. And again, that sounds like Rabbi Yossi. So we'll have to clarify what the difference between his last three opinions are. Bivat shiyamut, assuming that he passes away. Ma'ika ben Rabbi Meir, the Rabbi Yossi. So let's first understand what's the difference between this position of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi. I'm Rabbi Yochanan, asham talui ika benayu. What korban did you bring if a person sleeps with this woman in that interim period? The Rabbi Meir, lo maiti asham talui. According to Rabbi Meir, you don't bring an asham talui. An asham talui is a korban that's brought when you have a safek isur. According to Rabbi Meir, either she was an eshadish, when he find out that he survives the illness and does not succumb to the illness, or she was a pnuya when we find out that he does die from this illness. So retroactively, we will know. Either this guy is chayav achatat, if she was an eshadish, if the guy survives, or he's chayav nothing because she was a pnuya. And therefore, the korban that he would bring, according to Rabbi Meir, is either a chatat or nothing. But otherwise, there's no korban, or there's no sense of bringing asham talui. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi might be asham talui. According to Rabbi Yossi, she remains a suffek eshadish. Literally, her status is that of a suffek eshadish, and that will never be clarified retroactively. That will be her permanent status until he dies, and then the get is effective immediately before his death, or he survives the illness, and then it's clarified that there wasn't a get. But in the interim period, he always remains a suffek, and when you have a suffek isur karet, that involves a shogeg, you bring in a sham talui. Therefore, according to Rabbi Yossi, you bring in a sham talui, and as Tosafot points out over here, he obviously doesn't have the requirement that in the Gemara in Kodashim, that an asham talui only comes when you have Isser and Heter in front of you and you pick one of the two. Because over here, the one individual, the woman herself, has the safek embedded in her. She's both the Isser and Heter in one. So obviously, Rabbi Yossi does not have that requirement. The Chachamim are migreshet, venu migreshet. And the Chachamim say she is and is not migreshet. Chachamim, hainu Rabbi Yossi. Again, Chachamim and Rabbi Yossi have a similar position, which is that she is a safek. Where it says, ikebe nayu de Rabbi Zeira. The nafkamina between them is this position of Rabbi Zeira. Dama Rabbi Zeira. Amar Rabba Bar Yirmi, Amar Shmuel. We have a memra from Rabbi Zeira. Kol makom shemru Chachamim migreshet, venu migreshet. Anytime the Chachamim say that the status of the woman is that she is migreshet and not migreshet, mean that there's a safek about the gerushin. But they use this particular language, bala chayav mizonotea. Her husband is required to support her. And as Rashi notes over here, the Chachamim and Rabbi Yossi do not disagree about this point of Rabbi Zeira. They both agree that if the terminology used to describe this woman is migreshet veinu migreshet, then the bal is chayav mizonot. The only question is, here, in our case in particular, is that the language that's used? The Chachamim say, yes, the language used here is migreshet veinu migreshet. And that means that the husband would be chayav mizonot during this interim period. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi says that the way to describe this woman is bilata safek. She is in limbo. And so since you don't use the lashon migreshet, the eino migreshet, therefore the husband is not chayav in mizonot. Not that, again, they disagree fundamentally with Rabbi Zera's position that they agree to. And not that they disagree about the woman's status here. She's definitely a safek. The question is, how do they word or term the safek here? Because that'll have an afkamin as to whether the husband is chayav in mizonot. And the Rabbanim worded as migreshet veinu migreshet, which means that the husband is chayav in mizonot. Rabbi Yossi terms it as bilata safek, and therefore the husband is not chayav in mizonot. And even though in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yossi used the term migreshet veinu migreshet, Tosafot over here says, trei tanayei aliba de Rabbi Yossi. These are two different tanaim that explain the position of Rabbi Yossi, whether Rabbi Yossi is like the Chachamim over here, or whether Rabbi Yossi is like Rabbi Yossi of the Braita, using the Lashon of Bilata Safek rather than Migreshet Veinu Migreshet. Now, Tosafot over here raises a serious issue that if we believe, like Rabbi Yehuda's position here, that the woman is considered to be a Eshet Ish completely during this period of time until the death of the individual, then how do we deal with the issue of David HaMelech and Bathsheba? The Gemara claims over there that David HaMelech and the incident with Bathsheba was not really Eshet Ish, because Kol Yotzei the Milchamat Beit David, that anybody went out to battle in the time of David HaMelech used to give a get to his wife in case he died in the battle. But what does that do, or how does that help us in this situation? Because at the time that David consorted with Bathsheba, Uriah HaHiti was still alive. And it's only later on, when he was killed in the battle, that we then clarify that they are divorced. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, he's a Ishto Eshedish to Kol Davar until that point of death. That means even retroactively, it does not clarify the problem or solve the problem, because she only stops being an Eshedish at the time that her husband passes away. And so therefore, what does the giving of a get do in that situation, or help out in that situation? Now, Tosafot says that according to Rashi Shita, that the Mishnah is two different cases, then you could just explain that the get, in the case of the troops of Beit David, they said Mehayom. And it actually says everybody agrees when you say Mehayom that the get is effective immediately or retroactively once the individual passes away. So therefore, Rashi, Lishitato, could solve that problem. But according to the Rabbeinu Tam, who says even when you say Mehayom, it's the equivalent Ke'omer Me'et Shani Ba'olam, then according to Yehuda, the get is never effective retroactively, and she is an ish to hold bara until the point of death of the individual. In addition to that, Tosafot brings other questions as to why or how the get worked, because if it all had to do with death, then only certain people would need the get. In the end, Tosafot amends it to read that everybody gave a get, and the get was not on its night if I die in the battle, but rather if I don't return from the battle. So that if I don't return from the battle, then you won't be left as an aguna. Whether the person dies or whether something happens that they don't come back immediately, the woman won't be left hanging. And therefore, the stipulation was not if I die in the battle, but rather if I do not return from the battle. So in the end, the Rabbeinu Tam has to come up with an explanation of that Gemara. And he says that when they said that they divorced Al-Tnai, it really was not on a condition. But that anybody who went out to battle in the time of Beit David, they used to give a full-fledged get to their wife without any conditions in it. And then if they returned from the battle safely, then they would remarry their wife. So then it's a little strange because Gemara says that they did it all tonight. Where is the tonight over here if they're actually giving a get? So what Rabbeinu Tam suggests is that when they gave the get, when they went out to battle, they did it betzina. They did it privately between them and their wife. And then it would only become public if the husband didn't return or there was a problem, then the wife would make it public that they are divorced. But since it was just between the husband and wife, and it was a very private matter, they call it al-tnai, as if it was on a condition, because it wasn't a widely known thing that these individuals were divorced. Although it's a little strange, because if everybody did it, all the troops of Beit David did it, then everybody would know that they had divorced before they went, because that was the protocol for the troops that went out to battle. But in order to solve this problem, the Rabbeinu Tam suggests that when they went out to battle, they actually literally divorced their wives, and then when they returned from the battle, they remarried. That was how he would then uphold the Gemara that David HaMelech did not sleep with the nation Ish Batsheva, which of course is not the Pashtuta Psukim, and we see that in many places in Shas, that there are alternative views that David HaMelech did have a problem and he did sin with regards to Batsheva, but that Gemara in Shabbat that suggests that David HaMelech lo chata, and that she was not a nation Ish, well, according to Rashi, it'll be because there was a Tanai and they said Me'ayom, which would be effective even according to Rabbi Yehuda. According to Rabbi Tam, they literally got divorced. And the reason that she was called the Neshed Ish was because it was done privately. So that's why other places in Shas, they call her Neshed Ish. Or they call it al-Tnai because it was done privately and not as a public or obvious divorce between the parties. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Ayin Dalet Amud Aleph.